Good evening, everybody.
Hello and welcome to Disney Magic Hour, episode number 122. On this week's show, we are going to review 1977's The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. To my left, as always, is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
Joining us via Skype is Courtney Van Ren. Say hello, Courtney.
Hello, Courtney.
And from the Main Street Gazette is none other than Ryan Wilson. Say hello, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. This episode of Disney Magic Hour is brought to you by MEI Travel for all your vacation planning needs for visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, or traveling to the 100-acre wood to see a silly old bear. Visit the experts over at meitravel.com, where Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. Right now, you're listening to There You Are. You can find this track and more over at soundcloud.com/PogoMix. His website is PogoMix.net. We are LastGenPodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at DizMagicHourPod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, if you search for our group, you can just search for Disney Magic Hour. If you're already in there, add your friends. Always a great way to expand that community. You can find this show on iTunes and Google Play and Stitcher. And Melissa, where can everyone find pictures and the Patreon?
You can head over to Instagram.com and find us at Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And if you want to find out ways to help the show, you can go to Patreon.com/Disney Magic Hour and you can find out how to help us there.
And Ryan, where can everyone find you and the work you do on the Main Street Gazette?
It's at MainSTGazette.com. If you're looking for us on Twitter or Instagram, it's MainSTGazette. And if you search for Main Street Gazette on Facebook, you'll find us there too.
Happy Sunday, everyone, if there is such a saying as Happy Sundays. Well, today there is. Happy Sundays, everyone.
Happy Sunday.
That's a noise. So how is everyone doing? We got a relatively normal show this week. Last week we rolled out the first of many episodes to come that are going to actually be hosted by Ryan Wilson himself. And last week, you know, it was all about Main Street. So I just wanted to say I had a really good time. I'm looking forward to next week and doing some more and digging into more of the history and tying it in to some stuff that's going on right now, actually, right? With next week, I think we found like a little bit of a connection.
Yeah. So next week we're going to do some Epcot. So we're going to do the Festival of the Arts. I know you guys have been a couple of times. So we're going to get kind of a review of what's going on there. And then also, we're going to tie it back to Epcot's Millennium Celebration. So the parades, the fireworks, the wand, all that fun stuff.
The longest parade ever. The longest song ever, also. The unending, pretty much, the song for that parade. I used to have it, and it was like 40 minutes long or some insane thing. But it was just really the same chant over and over again. It wasn't like there wasn't much variation in that 40 minutes. It was just a really long song. What was the name of that thing again? It's going to kill me if I don't hear it.
Tapestry of Dreams.
Tapestry of Nations.
And then they had Tapestry of Nations. Yeah, the first one was Tapestry of Nations.
Wait, they changed it? Okay, we'll talk about it next week.
That is next week.
That's literally the show next week, so I'll shut up now. I don't know. We're settled into the new place. For anyone who kind of, you know, follows us on Facebook and whatnot, me and Melissa moved. You know, we're settled. We're pretty much settled.
Yeah.
I'd say.
Yeah, I think we got about 99% of the boxes out of here, so that's good.
Yeah.
Just one or two left to go.
There's like three. Well, we're doing good. We're doing better than we did the first time.
Yeah.
We had so many boxes sitting up against the wall to the day we moved.
Yeah.
And we were in there for a year and a half.
Whoops.
Yeah. So hopefully this time we actually unpack things. Courtney?
Yes, sir.
Are you entombed in ice?
No, not really.
Good.
We had some snow earlier, and it stuck around for a couple days because it stayed pretty darn cold. And my husband got a day off of work, and I work from home, so I did not.
Aww.
But, you know, it's okay. It's all right. It's warming up, and it's lovely outside today, I think.
It's been nice. I mean, we had a little cold stretch, like a realistic cold stretch, not a Florida cold stretch. But it was nice the last couple of days.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we actually had some nice fog up here this morning, when I was like getting set up, and I'm like, oh, it's like the 100-acre wood outside my window.
See, that would be nice. We get fog.
Oh yeah. There's definitely times where I drive to work. There was one day I drove to work and I was like, holy cow, I cannot see.
We used to have this, well, we used to. It's still there. We didn't actually put it up there. There was a sign that on our way home, it was for skydiving, and it was a very bright neon blue.
Oh, yeah.
And there was one morning or one night, I don't remember. I was coming back from a job that I did, and it was dark out, but the whole sky was lit up blue because this light was hitting the fog. At such a low, you know, a low height, and it was kind of cool looking. It also really looked kind of creepy. So, Melissa,
yes,
what are we talking about this week?
We are talking about a silly old bear.
Yes, we are. We are going to do one of our world famous movie reviews this week. We are going to speak about the many adventures of Winnie the Pooh. So, you want to start going into that? We didn't have any real news, right?
No. News has been kind of light this week, which is nice.
Light news. So, The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. Let's discuss. This film was released back in March the 11th of 1977. Clocking in at 77 minutes. It, of course, was based on the books that were written by A.A. Milne. Which actually stands for Alan Alexander, which I tell you right now, for most of my life, up to like, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, I always thought that was a woman. Mm. I thought she used, you know, the AA to mask that she was a woman so that people would actually buy the book. Mm. You know how that was a big thing, you know, P.L. Travers, right. You know, same sort of thing. I thought it was the same situation. Nope, it isn't. But talking about that story, Ryan, do you have any information towards... you know, where the story came from and all that kind of good stuff?
Yeah, so A.A. Milne wrote a ton of books, but really four that tied to kind of the Pooh stuff, whether they won the Book of Poetry, won some other things. But what really pulled the Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh pulled from were the two books, Winnie the Pooh from 1926 and The House at Pooh Corner in 1928. They would take the E.H. Shepherd, who was the illustrator from the books, who was good friends with A.A. Milne's family and his son, Christopher Robin Milne, and they took those illustrations to kind of create that, you know, build their story around. And you had Walt, who had his kids had loved these books the same way that they had loved the Mary Poppins books. And so he wanted the rights for these. He went ahead to start a feature, and they got about 2/3 of the way through storyboarding before they realized, you know what, America's not ready for this. They don't know Winnie the Pooh. So we're going to do a series of shorts tied to these, and we're going to release those until people know where they are, and then we'll get a film put together. And so you had, you know, Larry Clemen, Ralph Wright, Vance Gary, Exocencio, Ken Anderson, Julius Finson, Ted Berman, and Eric Kleeworth, who worked over the course of the three shorts that ended up being Winnie the Pooh and the Honey Tree, in 1966, which would be the only one that Walt would see, and then Blustery Day in 68, which he had a hand in, but he passed away before that came out, and then Tigger 2, Winnie the Pooh and Tigger 2 in 74.
Yeah, and then the final piece was The House at Pooh Corner, which that was the only one that was new, really, and then I guess the in-between, the transitions between the stories, obviously that was right. New also. So what Ryan brings up, though, is a pretty interesting point, because you know, if you kind of look just a little bit beyond it, The Jungle Book was really not Walt's last produced film. If you go by, like, technically what was up on the screen, it's Winnie the Pooh, even though he's uncredited. He's not credited as a producer, but he was producer on roughly half the film. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were to break it down just by segments, he's the producer on about half the film. So that was pretty interesting. I couldn't remember if this was accurate, so I'm going to ask you guys. I was reading about A.A. Milne, and he actually served in both World Wars. But on World War II, he served as the British Home Guard. Was that not like the group that the father or something joined in Bed Knobs and Broomsticks at the end? Do you guys remember that?
I'm yesing and knowing. So the Home Guard was the group that saw him off at the end.
Yes, that they, that's right.
That
that's
they
right.
took him out to the thing, but the home guard were the ones who stayed put in their town.
Yes. Okay. I knew it was in there. I just couldn't remember like how it was in there. So going back to the film, this movie, you know, obviously they go into production, semi-production. It's a weird thing because, again, a large amount of it is already sort of there. But ultimately, this film is directed by John Lounsbery, who we also have directing The Rescuers. He was more of an animated director on a lot of projects, in particular, some of them would be Dumbo, Song of the South, Cinderella, Peter Pan, 101 Dalmatians. And it was co-directed also with Wolfgang Reitherman, who also produced this particular film. He's the one credited with the production. And he was also the director on Aristocats, Sword in the Stone, Jungle Book, and Robin Hood. We pretty much heard those two guys' names through most of the 70s and going into the 80s as we move forward. But there be a voice cast, and a voice cast that many would say, many would say is sort of... What's the word I'm looking for? Like, when you think of Disney voice casts, I don't know why, but Winnie the Pooh seems like one of the standard bearers. You know, because outside of, like, the main crew, you know, the what's the word I'm looking for? Mickey and Pals. What do they call them? Fab Five? Thank you. Outside of them, I don't know why, but I think of, like, Winnie the Pooh is right underneath them as the most popular animated characters. Like, when you think of,
I think that's accurate. Yeah,
like right? Right around there?
Yeah.
So Melissa, who is doing the voices in this? Because there is more than one on a couple of characters alone, which is weird, but that's what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably the most iconic would be the narrator because, you know, he starts off our film and he kind of introduces us to our characters. And I really do like the way that the narrator, you know, interacts with the characters throughout the film. And that is brought to us by Sebastian Cabot. You might know him as Kris Kringle from Miracle on 34th Street. He was on a couple of Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color. He was in the Beverly Hillbillies. He was Sir Ector and the narrator for The Sword and the Stone, so we've already heard him before. He was also Bagheera from The Jungle Book. And he was also in Disney's Johnny Tremaine. So he's definitely been around before.
He was also in The Time Machine, like one of my favorite movies of all time, George Powell's Time Machine. Sadly, though, he died 5 months after the release of this film. He had a stroke.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of a thing with this. There's a lot of final performances in this movie that I found out.
Yeah, they are.
Kind of weird, wasn't it?
But there's also a lot where it's like, oh, but this guy has done this voice for another 30 years. So
it's kind of true.
Crazy how it works.
They found a job for the rest of their life.
Yeah. And I didn't include all of the titles of those things. So after our narrator, I think we have the other iconic Winnie the Pooh, who is voiced by Sterling Holloway, whose name is kind of in the very long list of Disney canon. Sorry, couldn't think of the words I was looking for there. Just a couple of his prior performances. We have Casey at the Bat. He was Cheshire Cat from Alice in Wonderland. He was a stork from Dumbo. He was Adult Flower from Bambi. He was in The Three Caballeros and The Cold-Blooded Penguin. He was in Peter and the Wolf, which is one of my favorites. He was in Lambert the Sheepish Lion. He was the narrator from Mickey and the Beanstalk. He was in he was a narrator from Susie the Little Blue Coop. These are like all my favorite things from like when I was younger, like the Disney shorts. Susie the Little Blue Coop. He was Ka from The Jungle Book. He was the Mouse Rockfort in The Aristocats. He was in one of the later animated series Adventures of Superman. He was Professor Oscar Quinn and Professor Tweedle.
Like from the WB one?
I don't think it was. No, that wasn't that
one. Oh, okay. I was like, wow, that's crazy. All right.
He was, of course, in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World and probably one of your favorite Twilight Zone episodes, What's in the Box. He was the TV repairman.
Yes.
I know you like that one.
I like that. The weird one I remember we found once was he narrated an episode of Moonlighting. Was one of the things, like, he was a narrator on an episode of Moonlighting.
Yeah, he did a lot of narration, not only for animated stuff, but
We were talking with someone recently. Oh, I know what it was. It was on Film Basement. We were talking with Ashley, and she found the narration in a film that we were talking about, Brief Encounter. Mm-hmm. And she was like, you know, I found it really distracting because I realized there aren't a lot of movies nowadays that come out with narration.
That's very true.
And then when I heard it in this, you know, in that particular movie, it really distracted her because she was just not used to hearing someone, you know, talk to her while she was trying to watch a movie.
Yeah, like I can't think of a reason why that happens a lot.
Maybe it's like a jokey voiceover, like Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah.
You know, like that sort of has like a semi voiceover, but it's only at the beginning and the end, actually, now that I think of it. It's not really a narration.
Yeah.
I know that there were a couple in the last number of years, but Wes Anderson films will have narration.
But
like
I also feel
that's like usually like you'll find it there.
Some of those, even though they're narrated by a character that's in the movie. So like there hasn't been one where like this narrator and like a lot of with Sterling Holloway's narrations, they are just not in the movie. They're just the voiceover for them.
Yeah, I know Tenenbaums, he's not in the film. But on other ones like my favorite one was, I can't remember all of a sudden.
Yeah, the hotel.
The Grand Budapest. That's a character in the movie. Yeah. But I guess Royal Tenenbaums would be like the best example of a narrator. Because that's just totally someone that's not in the movie.
Yeah.
Anyhoot, narration. Weird. I miss it. It's really fun when it's used correctly. It can be a lot of great stuff. I'm sorry, Melissa, go ahead.
That's okay. That was good. Okay, talking about a character that has had many voices, Christopher Robin. He has about three in this film. From the Honey Tree short, we have Bruce Reitherman, and that name should sound familiar because he is the son of Wolfgang Reitherman. His dad usually casted him. He casted him also as Mowgli in the Jungle Book. So Bruce was here. But actually, Bruce went on to become a cinematographer, and he kind of worked on wildlife documentaries. He worked on Island of the Giant Bears, In the Wild, Wales with Christopher Reeves was his one there, Wild Indonesia, New True Life Adventures, Alaska, Dances of the Caribou, that movie. There's a lot of colons in that movie. And he also worked...
Hey-o.
He also worked on The Living Edens, Big Bear Week, and Nature, a TV doc series.
Giant Bears, Big Bear Week.
Yeah, he liked bears.
He never really let go of Winnie the Pooh.
Like, I need my bears.
Did you say Christopher Reeve?
Yeah, there was an episode. It's in the wild, so the episode Whales was with Christopher Reeves.
Reeve.
That's what I said.
You said Reeves.
Yeah.
George Reeves. And everyone knows it's a Superman thing. It's a stupid Superman
I have it
thing.
Written down as Reeve. My reading, not so good.
We gotta get you an iPad. We really have to get you an iPad.
That'll be the next thing.
Yeah.
And then if we go to Blustery Day, mm-hmm. We have John Walmsley. There's a lot of L's in his name. Who voices Christopher Robin here. You'll know him mostly from The Waltons. He played Jason Walton. He was also on episodes of Seventh Heaven and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, so he kind of grew up and went some random places.
Wait a minute. Wait. Who is he in It's Always Sunny?
It was just like one episode, but he showed up on that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, his big recurring thing was The Waltons.
Okay.
And then finally from Winnie the Pooh and Tigger 2, we have Timothy Turner.
Mr. Turner.
He also voices Christopher Robin in Winnie the Pooh, The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, Tigger 2, and he was on, of course, The Wonderful World of Color.
Nice.
Now we'll go to, I would say, even though he wasn't really featured so much in this movie, probably Pooh's best friend, Piglet.
Yeah.
I forgot how much he like wasn't in this film.
I forgot how much Winnie the Pooh wasn't in the last 35 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
And that was more of the surprise for me when I was watching this.
He kind of disappears.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's off on adventures. So we have Piglet voiced by John Fielder. He actually voices Piglet through 2005, which is when he passed away. So on just a ton of Winnie the Pooh shorts and films. He's the staple.
Yeah.
But you'll also know him from, we'll get to him in The Rescuers. He voices an owl. Robin Hood, he played Father Sexton. Fox and the Hound, he was the porcupine. He was in The Wonderful World of Color, and probably one of my favorite Disney cameos, he was in The Emperor's New Groove as the old man.
Oh my God,
who
that's
threw
right.
Off his groove.
Why did I never put that together?
You
before?
Never put that together?
No, not at all.
That's awesome.
That's great.
How did I not, I shout that to you after we saw that, that's Piglet?
Because I don't like it when people talk during movies.
That's like the best part of that movie.
That is not the best part.
No, it's
of
one
movie.
Of the it's one of the great parts. Yeah.
Don't do this to me. You better say what else he was in.
Yeah, no. Okay? That was just I kind of grouped his Disney animated stuff together.
That's what I was hoping.
Yeah, yeah. So then we also have he was also in 12 Angry Men, of course.
Yes.
He was in The Odd Couple.
You can't put a man away on evidence like that.
He was in The Odd Couple, A Raisin in the Sun, Alfred Hitchcock Presents. He was in Twilight Zone. He was in 1969's True Grit. He made cameos in Bewitched, Kolchak, The Night Stalker, The Rockford Files, which was like a James Bond. He was in The Bob Newhart Show, Midnight Madness, Cannonball Run.
Midnight Madness, do you say?
Yes. And Stephen King's Golden Tales.
I've never heard of that.
Me neither, but I found it when I was looking it up.
Is it Tales as in like tails or like dog tails?
No, like tails, like stories, like T-A-L-E-S.
Damn it.
So yeah, that's a little bit of John Fielder. One of our favorite characters, Eeyore, he is voiced by Ralph Wright. He is the only voice actor for Eeyore, he was only a voice actor for Eeyore and the gloomy elephant from Jungle Book. So he has a theme there.
Yeah. Hey, do something, do it well. When you first said that, just imagine him coming and be like, the role is mine. None shall speak it other than I.
And he's like, poor me.
Okay.
And then he also went on to do story development for a lot of Mickey, Donald, and Goofy shorts. He worked Bambi story development, Saludos Amigos, Peter Pan, Lady and the Tramp, Sleeping Beauty, Jungle Book, Bedknobs and Broomsticks, Aristocats, and he is even uncredited, but there was some story development for Maleficent from 2014. I guess he had this idea a while back, and even though he had passed away before Maleficent was made, he still was part of this.
The idea was, don't do this!
Well, yeah.
They are making that sequel, by the way. That
is like mind-blowing.
They made a lot of money.
Isn't the sequel the animated film? Like, I don't...
But what if you knew the story after the story or whatever? I don't know.
Those taglines are silly.
They're always silly.
Yeah.
You made me think of something, though. There was a little bit of news that came out this week that I thought a lot of people would be interested in. Aren't they doing a special release? I'm trying to find it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was for the Disney movies.
The Disney Movie Club?
Yeah.
They are going to be releasing Saludos Amigos and Three Caballeros on Blu-ray exclusively on the Disney Music Club. Is that right?
It's like a two movie release, like the two in one kind of thing.
Combo. Combo breaker. But yeah, you have like you'll have to buy it through that.
Yeah.
That's really big. And that's also sort of a weird play.
Why?
I don't know. Hey, you could only get this through this. Like, to my knowledge, I'd never done anything like that before.
Maybe it's just you can only get the combo through them.
Combo break. I don't think so. I think this is it. I doubt they're going to make a, like, you know, the Lilo and Stitch is, you know, packed in with Lilo and Stitch 2. Same with Mulan.
Yeah.
I really doubt that they would all of a sudden make three different SKUs for these two movies. That doesn't seem like something that would happen.
Yeah. Which is a bummer because I really want to... I've never seen Saludos Amigos. No, I know.
We're going to get it. So.
I want to definitely watch that.
Yeah, we'll go. So, that was actually the one little piece of news that came out this week I thought was pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
So, Eeyore's.
Ho-hum. Another multiple voicer. We have Roo. In The Honey Tree, he's voiced by Clint Howard.
Star of Solo? A Star Wars story? He is in it, by the way. Of course he is, because Ron Howard directed it now. So he threw in Clint Howard, because it's a thing.
I get my brother's job.
Yeah, he has him in every film.
Cool.
So, yeah, he's going to be in there, too, somewhere.
Okay. You'll also remember him. He was an elephant from The Jungle Book. He was in Splash, Cocoon, Tango and Cash. Good?
Tango and Cash is pretty good. That might be the most 80s like movie action star movie ever.
I've never seen it, so I couldn't.
I think you would enjoy how silly it is. I really do.
Good. He was also in Rockin' Tear, all the Austin Power films, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Cat in the Hat, Cinderella Man, Curious George. He was in Andy Griffith Show when he was, I guess, younger. Bonanza, The Odd Couple, The Mod Squad, Arrested Development, Key and Peele. Just a couple random stuff.
A lot of things. Yeah, Clint Howard's a kind of a legend.
Yeah.
In a very odd way.
Yeah. And then in Winnie the Pooh, The Tigger 2, Roo is voiced by Dory Whitaker. So we switched to a female here. She also voiced Tagalong in Robin Hood. She was also in Marcus Welby, MD, which was a TV series. And then we have Kanga, the mom of Roo, voiced by Barbara Luddy. We know her as Meriwether, Lady from Lady and the Tramp, the Mother Sexton from Robin Hood, and Mother Rabbit, and then Rover from 101 Dalmatians.
She was also the grandmother in the original Carousel. She did the voice. She was the voice of the grandma in the original Carousel of Progress.
Oh, Carousel of Progress. Yeah. Okay.
And this also was her last role.
Yes.
This was her last role as well.
We have Paul Winchell, who voices Tigger. You might remember him as the Chinese cat from the Aristocats.
Sticks out. Yeah.
Yeah. He also will voice Boomer from The Fox and the Hound. He voiced Tigger through 2003, so he had his long run there. That was also when he passed away. But he did a lot of other voice work. He worked on the Jetsons. He was Gargamel from the Smurfs in a few of those.
Great.
He voiced Marmaduke from Heathcliff. He had voices in The Flintstones, Hong Kong Phooey, Dr. Seuss on the Loose, The Wacky Races. He voiced Dick Dastardly, Clyde, and Private Meekly. You'll also find him in Dastardly and Muttley in Their Flying Machines, Perils of Penelope Pitstop, Babette at Split's Adventure Hour, and Love America Style.
Ryan, I found out something pretty interesting about Tigger, and that was that Winchell was not the original pick for Tigger's voice. Walt had somebody that he wanted. Do you know who? Oh, Courtney's shaking her head over there.
I remember reading it. I can't remember who it was right now.
It rhymes with Polly Flogue.
Oh, yeah.
Is Wally Bogue.
Wally Bogue, yeah.
Yeah, he actually was the one that Walt wanted to voice Tigger. But Walt wasn't there to make decisions at a certain point. So they went with the Winchell, as they call it in the biz. When you went with the Winchell. That no one calls it that.
I would hope not. It's a weird one.
Yes.
But I think Tigger is one of the other iconic voices.
Absolutely, yeah.
I don't know how iconic Rabbit is, but he's voiced.
God, Rabbit is the worst.
Yeah.
Am I supposed to like actively hate Rabbit?
Yeah, he's kind of a piece of garbage.
Yeah.
God, what a ugh. Yeah. He's worse in later films too.
Yeah, he doesn't get better.
He's like the xenophobic racist of like he's like the representative for that in these movies.
Yeah.
And he's just the worst.
Yeah.
Although when he ends up with that bird in the animated series, that little like adopted bird child, like that's a turn that makes him a little bit more human later.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right. All right.
Yeah, he took care of
the wants favorite. People to like disappear or die in trees. It's weird.
Yeah. But his voice by Junius Matthews, he also voiced Owl in Sword in the Stone, and I didn't think Archimedes was that bad. So it's kind of interesting the range there.
Yeah. Acting! Genius!
There you go. Speaking of owls, we have Owl, who's voiced by Hal Smith.
Howl Smith?
Howl.
Okay.
Boo. He played Owl through 1994 when he passed away. He was also in Welcome to Pooh Corner. He was in Son of Flubber. He did some Walt Disney Wonderful World of Color. He also did voice work with Sesame Street, Tailspin, DuckTales. He played Philippe in Beauty and the Beast, and he also played Jafar's horse in Aladdin. So
I wish I had a career. It was just like horse acting, horse voice acting.
He was the narrator for Nausicaa in the Valley of the Wind.
They had a narrator?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
He played Goofy or Marley's ghost from Mickey's Christmas Carol. He also did voice work from The Smurfs, Trollkins, Heathcliff, the Fantastic Four TV series from 1978, Scooby-Doo, Where Are You?, Andy Griffith Show. He was in The Ghost of Mr. Chicken. He also did voice work on The Flintstones, Huckleberry Hound Show, Quick Draw McGraw, Top Cat, Green Acres, Dennis the Menace, Have Gun Will Travel, and a David and Goliath TV series.
All right.
Yeah. And then finally, we have Gopher, who is voiced by Howard Morris. He was also in The Andy Griffith Show, Splash, High Anxiety, Beetle Bailey, The Twilight Zone, The Nutty Professor. He did voice work for The Flintstones, The Famous Adventures of Mr. Magoo, The Secret Squirrel Show, Miguel Gorilla Show, Adam Ant Show, Sabrina, Archie, Alvin and the Chipmunks, The 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo, Jetsons, Flintstones Kids, The New Yogi Bear Show, Superman TV Series, DuckTales, Chip and Dale, Rescue Rangers, Tailspin, Sesame Street, Garfield and Friends, Cow and Chicken, The Wild Thornberries.
All right. My God, are you?
I Am Weasel and All Grown Up. All there right. you go. He has a long list.
Yeah, really? My goodness.
Once you get to Cow and Chicken, you know you've...
I had to get there.
You've made it.
Yeah.
You gotta make it in this world. You said Sabrina. They're actually going to be making a live-action Sabrina show, the way that they're doing the Riverdale show, and it's supposed to be a little more magic-y, like dark magic-y. They did a comic that started up a couple of years ago, and it was really, really good. So that is our cast. Extensive notes on the cast. Well done, Melissa.
Thank you.
My goodness. What's left to talk about this movie but the sounds that come out of people's mouths when they're not singing, when they're not just talking, when they're singing? And that I give you, Connie Van Rans, to speak about.
Music. Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. So obviously, I think we all know that the songs are by the Sherman Brothers. I'm not going to go in depth with the Sherman Brothers because we've talked about that quite a bit in the past on the show. So
who are the Sherman Brothers?
Yeah, who are they? Who are they deep down? For me, I would say that these are some of the most memorable songs from my childhood, and I have a lot of nostalgia surrounding these songs. But the score for this movie was done by Buddy Baker. I actually kind of had a hard time digging up information. I actually messaged Ryan yesterday and was like, hey, Ryan, will you help me? Because I can't find anything. And then I promptly found something, so everything's fine, guys. Scores by Buddy Baker. And Buddy Baker was the last staff composer at any major studio, and he retired in 1983.
Wow.
And he was honored as a Disney legend in 1998. So that's very exciting for Buddy Baker, who I had never known of before now.
Yeah, really.
Is he the tapping guy in The Dancing Man?
No, that's Buddy Epson.
Buddy Epson, thank you. That's why I was like, Buddy. All right.
No, good. But he did do things that you will know. Like he wrote Grim Grinning Ghosts for The Haunted Mansion, along with Exotencio. And he worked as the musical director for Epcot, and he worked on Universe of Energy, American Adventure, World of Motion, Wonders of China, Kitchen Cabaret, Impressions de France, and Listen to the Land.
Wow.
So he did a lot of things that you know. And other notable scores that he worked on in his time with Disney are, he wrote for 55 episodes of The Wonderful World of Color, The Fox and the Hound, The Apple Dumpling Gang, and The Apple Dumpling Gang Rides Again.
Ew.
Your personal favorite, The Gnomemobile.
Mm. Wait, what? Wait.
Yep.
So I've, that name's been said on this show then before.
It must have been said before on the show, yeah.
Wow, okay.
Once I dug in a little bit further, I was like, man, we probably talked about him before. and then finally, Summer Magic as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and he's done much more than just that, but those are the notable things that I would think most people would want to know and identify with regarding Buddy Baker. And then the last thing I'll say about Buddy Baker and the Sherman Brothers is that they did win a Grammy for Best Recording for Children in 1965 for Winnie the Pooh and Tigger 2.
Very nice.
So there's a little bit about your music.
Very nice.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I'm getting an echo. Now it's gone. Okay. That was weird. That happened a couple of times.
Yeah.
There's a ghost in the machine, folks. I was going to say, you know, towards this particular soundtrack, or I would say the Sherman Brothers music in particular, this has got in my book, that's right behind Mary Poppins.
Absolutely.
You know, as a full work. Ryan, what do you think?
I absolutely agree. And to speak to even how much they loved it, they had actually left the studio before this became the feature. And they came back because they wanted to make sure that it was seen through the way that they wanted it seen through and that it had their touch on it.
Right.
I once dated somebody who told me that Kenny Loggins wrote all of this music.
Is that true? No, it is not. No, I mean, is it true that you dated someone that told you that?
Yes, it is.
Wow, gross.
Yeah.
That didn't last long after that, I
Shame
hope.
On them.
That was the same person who also told me that that painting, The Scream, what was it, Munch?
Yeah.
Munch?
Yeah.
That it was the artist's reaction to the Holocaust. And I said, no. Years on this don't match up.
Yeah, no.
Because certain things happened 100 years after the other?
Ish, yeah.
Kids, don't believe everything you read.
Or this was, oh, this was pre-internet, girl. This was this was just homegrown knowledge. This was the dark times before the empire. This was when that happened. So yeehaw to all that. Let's talk about the movie. Right?
Yes, sir.
Let's talk about the movie. There wasn't really too much on the production, you know, as I said earlier, just because they were already sort of made. So let's just talk about the movie in some, you know, some broad strokes. I wanted to first say, during the opening credits, it kind of, it never dawned on me how much, in essence, you can see where, like, the ideas of Toy Story might be born in this film. You know, not so much like the physical toys come to life, but... You know, the toys are coming to life, and this is like in a, you know, a boy's imagination. It all really does happen, you know, if you like being honest about it, like in his bedroom, you know. And I don't know, the opening scene, the opening credit sequence in particular made me think of Toy Story. I was like, oh, well, you know, besides them moving, you know, this is really the same setup overall and tone and stuff like that. I thought that was pretty pretty interesting. This movie, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that they had all of the stuffed characters there, and they all pretty much resembled their cartoon versions, except for Tigger. Did anyone notice that?
Yeah.
That Tigger stuffy was pathetic looking.
No, I didn't. They've
perfected Tigger in the stuffy form now, so when you get him in the stores now, he looks like Tigger, but... That one in that opening was scary looking.
Yeah, it was like a very like old timey tiger. Like it was more like a tiger than.
Well, isn't that what the original toy though was?
Yes, but and if you actually look at the poster for Winnie the Pooh and the Honey Tree, you can actually if you look, Tigger and Piglet are both on that poster, even though they're not in that short, and their design is still very much more the Shepherd book drawings than the Disney version that's going to come out later because they hadn't fully developed either one of them yet.
Okay.
And those toys are on display in New York somewhere, in like a library room or something like that. I can't remember. Did you look at the picture, Melissa?
Yeah, I did. And yeah, Tigger looks like, he almost looks like a horse, like an orange horse.
Yeah.
It's very weird.
Yeah.
Orange horses. That's where the future lies. When I start doing that crossbreeding between tigers and horses.
Gets called, weird.
Are you going to voice the orange horse?
Of course I am. That's going to be my future world. Torses. Is it torses or is it?
Torses of a different color. That's what you need to start working on.
You can't do the other one.
Yeah, the other one's too close to bad things. Is Pooh Bear the most adorable character ever?
We should debate
this, but...
Within
the first 30 seconds of this movie?
Yes.
One would say a poll. Nope, not a poll.
A bracket
should be made about this.
Yeah, we're going to need to do that for sure.
We're going to need a bracket on this because that's a knife fight.
There's cute characters, but cute characters may be the largest bracket we've ever done.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah.
Pooh has a lot of ammunition for cuteness, though.
He does. I prefer how he looks, though, in this, like, the original. Like, I don't particularly like how they draw him, you know, because it gets to, like, very CG look, like, you know. And I don't know, like, he is round and everything, but there's points on him in this animated stuff that they don't bring out anymore, and it's kind of, I don't know.
How do you mean, like a fluffiness?
No, like legit points. Like, I don't know, the way that his head is shaped, like there's a little bit more angles in this one than now when they have it in the CG, and he's like, I don't know, I don't know if I particularly like the newer stuff. The newer stuff.
I don't know what the last movie wasn't CG, so
no,
are you talking about
the
TV shows?
Yeah,
oh, okay. I'm surprised. I would think it would be more angled on the CG.
You would think, but yeah, like the the way that they put him now on like mugs and t-shirts, it's just, it's very like...
He's super round.
Yeah, it's a little too round. That doesn't look like Pooh Bear.
But isn't he short and fat? Proud of that?
Yeah.
He's quite proud of that.
That's what I've heard.
He's got angles.
Does he? I have to tell him. Yeah, look at, okay.
He does, and it's also in the way they moved him in this one, and that was the stuff like they wanted to make sure he moved like a stuffed animal, like his head will spin because his head needs to spin to look at things.
Okay.
Like it's not like turning his head, it's like actually physically rolling. His arms do the same thing. And they did it for all the characters, but I think it does. It gives it a quality that I don't know if it's been lost or it's just not as noticeable anymore.
Yeah, I don't know if like they get away from that, like, this is a stuffed animal kind of thing.
Yeah, okay. That I understand what you mean now, yeah. Yes. And yes, that's actually very, very – that's pretty, right up on Front Street with the way that they do change that.
Might be a good call to not have his head turning all the way around anymore, that, since that was stuff of nightmares.
I think it's fine. I think it's fine. Throws up honey on everyone.
Oh, no.
Don't do that. They break the fourth wall a lot in this, with the narrator and stuff like that. But
that's my favorite part. Like when the narrator talks to the characters, especially Pooh and even Tigger, like when he's like, no. Like Pooh's so self-centered. He's like, am I in this story? He's like, don't worry. You're in it. It's so cute.
He's adorable. He's the most adorable. there is one point where they break the fourth wall, but it's actually, it doesn't even include the narrator. It has to do with the otter that I really enjoyed. Because
the gopher?
What was that?
Gopher?
Yeah, because the otter isn't in the original book. He appears in the sequel.
Wait, keep saying otter. Is it?
Oh, it's a gopher. Sorry, gopher. Yes. I don't know why I keep saying that. Because I'm drunk. Oh, because I wrote it down as an otter. That's why I keep reading what I wrote. He's not in the original book. He's in the sequel. And Pooh Bear even says, oh, don't mind him. He's not really in the book or something like that. Like he directly references that the book exists, that Disney is breaking the rule. He's not really supposed to be here. He's not in this original story.
Yeah.
But he's in the movie a fair amount. Like he does pop in quite a few times.
Stand gopher.
Yeah.
You can't stand him?
No, he's like the Gilbert Gottfried of this movie to me. Like I can't.
Your father was a moron.
Gilbert Gottfried is fine in pieces, but to me I couldn't take it with the little tooth whistle and all that nonsense.
I like that. I'm sorry.
I understand. Sorry.
What's up, Sunny? I can't even do it, but yeah, I like that.
I don't know why. Maybe I haven't watched this movie in a while. I really liked how he was totally a scumbag contractor. I can't give estimates. Like, I'll just pay at the end. I was like, oh, wow, this sounds shockingly familiar nowadays as I grow up. I was like, this all sounds really familiar. I liked him. I liked him a bit. I legitimately wanted to murder Rabbit.
Yeah, Rabbit, I don't know if he ever got better. I think the worst, though... I don't know if he was the worst with when Pooh Bear got stuck in his door or when he wanted to lose Tigger in the woods.
It's got to be the Tigger
fight. That's so terrible.
Didn't he want to do the same thing with Huffalump? He wanted to arrest Huffalump or put him in a hole.
He wanted to capture him, yeah. So he did the whole,
What's wrong with this character? Actually, out of the three, well, I should say four, because they call the last one, at Pooh Corner. They call it the house at Pooh Corner. What was your favorite? What was your guys' favorite sequence? Was it Honey Tree, Blustery Day, Tigger 2, or the house at Pooh Corner? Melissa?
I really like Honey Tree. It's got some of my favorite songs in there, so I really like that one.
Courtney?
I'm going to go with Honey Tree as well for songs.
Yeah.
Ryan?
Blustery Day. That's the one I grew up with. Like that's where I fell in love with Winnie the Pooh, so that's where I always go back to.
I didn't think of this answer before I asked it. Because I thought of the question just now. I should have thought about this more. It's definitely Blustery Day or Honey Tree. It's not Tigger 2. I kinda don't like Tigger. sometimes.
Really?
I kind of don't like it. I don't like it when people just come in and break things and, like, that's their thing. It's like, look, I ruined everything. It's like, yeah, we know. You ruin everything.
But he doesn't ruin everything. He only ruins rabbits' things.
That's true.
Okay, in my opinion.
He kind of ruins Pooh's afternoon also. I mean, that's one of my favorite things is when he, like, opens a door. I was going to say that's a nomination for iconic shot is Tigger standing over Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, and he's, like, sitting on his tummy?
Yeah. I always think that that's one of the iconic shots in the movie.
There's a bunch.
The interesting thing is that if you look at, like, the sequence follows a full year, if you're really paying attention. Like, Honey Tree is a spring, summer is the blustery day. Well, spring into summer is blustery day. You get the fall when they're trying to lose Tigger, and then the winter when he and Roo get stuck in the tree. Like, it kind of goes through this whole cycle with them, and Tigger is the prominent piece for for half of that year.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's a question of mine. Do you think that this movie loses steam in the second half of the film? I think Winnie the Pooh not being in there as much for, like, the second half of the film and focusing on Tigger and Rabbit more than any other two characters.
I think it's because Rabbit brings it down, because I like Tigger overall. Like, when he was there with Roo, I didn't think it was that bad. But, like, the Rabbit parts really kind of get me annoyed because he's just so, like... Like, why do you want to do this to this person? Like, it's just, like, so aggravating.
Why does everyone in the town go along with it?
That also.
That was my biggest... One of my biggest questions was during the Piglet, house scene.
Oh, that was,
like,
so
good. Like, everyone knows it's, like, no, it already belongs to somebody else. Just because Eeyore said, like, this is a good house, it doesn't instantaneously mean that, like, you kick the person out. Who's making these rules?
I mean, if those were the rules, then I know a good house in Golden Oaks that I want to move into.
Was it because, like, he misread the sign and it said Owl's House on it?
But it didn't even say Owl.
Like, no one agreed with that. I think Piglet may have agreed with that, but it's because it's Piglet. Like, he could have said anything.
Piglet. I mean, if Piglet's reasoning for having the house to start with is that his grandfather's name was Trespasser's Will, then, I mean, it could be Owl's house too, so.
That's a good point, actually. I never thought of it.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
I just love how also going with the spelling and people can't read, like, this whole thing, like, it's a theme. Like, Honey's always spelt wrong. Rabbit's things are terribly labeled. But, like, in the very beginning, Pooh, like, spells out a word. And I forget what it is, but it was, like, a pretty decent, like, word for somebody who can't spell and or read.
I think it's suspect.
Yes. And it's like, wait, you know this word and you know how to spell it, but you can't spell
Honey? I think with Rabbit around, the word suspect is very well known.
I think it's like the 5-year old. Like, you look at it through the world of a 5-year old. And occasionally 5-year olds will miss the basic words, but they get, like, real words and you're like, how did you come up with that?
I guess.
Like, where did you learn that?
That's how I would take that.
It's just funny. It's just funny to me. Like, everybody, like, the spellings are terrible and everything, but he knows suspect. Like, it's great.
Well, and even going to the owl word, I mean, we know O-W-L. They spell it W-O-L. Even owl spells it that way.
Yeah.
But they're talking about trespassers will, W-I-L. Like, they can't even get, like, their letters correct at this point.
That's good.
There's two letters the same. That's all that matters.
It's a good thing. And they continue it, like, in the later films. One of the main plot points, one of the inciting incidents of the later film is that the words back soon – they take as back soon, as like, the back soon. Like, that's an entire film based on illiteracy.
That owl can't read again.
Yeah, and that
they
owl
pointed out
can't
in that
read.
One. They point out real clearly in that one, like, when they're singing their song and they're like, we'll be back soon. He's like, sounds like back soon. Like, yes,
that
it
song
does.
Is so good. That whole thing is really, really well done.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I really missed Pooh Bear being part of it, because then we get the final scene in this film is so good.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the most heart-touching, just heart-touching, not wrenching. I wouldn't say that comes later.
Yeah.
With the, Braver Than You Are and stuff like that, because that's like the goodbye. I forget which that was actually in.
Yeah, with the fireflies, right?
Yeah, with the firefly. But this one is so great. And something I really loved about, the Christopher Robin and Winnie the Pooh scene at the end when he's saying, you can't do nothing all day anymore, all that stuff. You never really get a shot, like a one or a close up or something like that of a character talking. it's them walking, and a lot of times their back is to the camera, and you don't really see their mouth moving. A couple of shots you do, but mm-hmm. it's from a distance. And I thought it was a really nice decision where, you know, it's sort of a voiceover, you know, in that one particular scene, but it's the two characters that are in the scene doing the voiceover. But I just think that's one of the sweetest endings of all time. And then the final, you know, line by Sebastian Cabot is just so perfect. You know, in a magical wood, there'll always be a little bear waiting. It's just so great. Oh, my God. I love it. Love it.
And there's even the actor who played Christopher Robin for that, I think, was the one from the Waltons. It was that Christopher Robin.
Oh, okay.
But he said that he came in to read that, and he, you know, he was like, yeah, you know, I was an English boy, you know, I was a small English boy. This made sense to me. And he goes to read that scene, and he didn't know what they were reading him, and he said he lost it. Aww. Like, he, and it comes through, like, he goes, that's the most genuine acting job I've ever done, because it was all real.
Yeah. It's sad.
Yeah,
you know, the idea, because what was it? There was a movie called Beautiful Girls, phenomenal movie. Timothy Hutton, Natalie Portman, an incredible turn by Rosie O'Donnell, which is not something you usually hear. But anyways, the movie's filled with people. Uma Thurman in one of her earliest roles, just phenomenally funny. And Natalie Portman is like the young spunky girl in the area, and Timothy Hutton is the guy coming home just to like visit his friends, and they form a friendship. And one of the things that she says to him, you know, they're like, oh, well, you know, he's going back home, and it's like, oh, we'll be, you know, we'll stay in touch. Or she says, you know, we'll stay in touch. And he's like, no, I'm, you know, I'm just, you know, you're Winnie the Pooh, and one day you're going to grow up and you're not going to want to talk to me. And he's like, that's how Winnie the Pooh ends. And Natalie Portman just like, I think she's skating, and she just stops and she turns. She's like, that's the saddest thing I've ever heard. And, you know, Timothy Hutton explains, he's like, yeah, well, you know, eventually Christopher Robin grows older and he grows out of Pooh, and, you know, that, you know, he loses that. And this is sort of like that first, you know, inclination of that, you know, ultimate ending, where, again, you can point at Toy Story, you know, where Andy, you know, eventually, you know, has to give up Woody and Buzz and this and that, because he would just get kicked out of him in college. If he's like keeping all of his toys,
he shows up with toys.
Yeah,
my little brother has a Woody that I gave him at his dorm at college.
Okay, so now I think that's like a kitsch thing to do. Like, that's an okay thing to do. You can get away with that. In the 80s and 90s, I don't really know if that was a thing. Like, before it was popular to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I couldn't have done it in college. It would have ended poorly.
Yeah, it would have been a thing. Would have been a thing. But Melissa, what about you? Do you think were you invested in the movie the whole way through?
Pretty much. I was trying to kind of find the image you were talking about with Christopher Robin and Pooh.
It's like a whole scene.
Yeah,
it's like a whole
scene. So I was trying to find that, sorry. But no, I agree. I think the Rabbit and Tigger parts definitely lost me, because I got very frustrated with Rabbit. I didn't mind. It's so much, it kind of went quick, but I definitely felt more invested in the opening two, more so also because the songs, like those songs, like I remember them from when I was young, like Pooh was my favorite character. So like the, you know, the Up Down song, the Little Black Rain Cloud, like all of those are like, I don't know, they're my favorite. So I was definitely more heavily invested in the beginning than I was at the end. I kind of like zoned out a little bit at the end. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you bring it up. What songs happen in the last two sequences?
Well, you have the Tigger, the wonderful thing about Tiggers, and you have the Heffalumps and Woozles, which I do like. I do like.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay. I guess I'm just thinking of like the Rabbit and Tigger parts.
Yeah.
When Winnie the Pooh is not in the thing.
Yeah.
Is there any music?
No.
Any songs that don't occur with Winnie the Pooh on screen?
There's music, but not songs.
That's I'm sorry. Like I meant like
there might
songs,
be one with Pooh and not Pooh with Rue and Tigger, but maybe there's not. I'm trying to think.
I don't think so.
They might have like a little chant when they're hopping off.
And I think that maybe like later on, like one of the Tigger 2 movies or whatever, you know, whatever that movie is.
Yeah. So like without Pooh, this movie actually really does lose the Sherman Brothers as well.
Yeah. Which loses it for me, because I mean those songs are like my favorite.
I'm very curious. I almost want to watch the more recent Winnie the Pooh movie and match it up to this one with a recent memory of it.
Yeah.
Like kind of cheat in our timeline and do the next one and see which one we prefer
if it comes to that.
The one from, what, 2011, I want to say it is? The Winnie the Pooh movie?
Anthony swears that one is better than this one. So that would be interesting to take a look at.
I want to do that.
I mean, we can do that. We should do that. We can do that for the live stream if you want. Mm-hmm.
We could do it for an episode.
You want to do an episode?
Okay. Do an episode for it.
Yeah.
Live stream is new stuff. We'll do that for that.
Okay.
Yeah. So, anyways, I really enjoy the movie, but I do think it loses a little bit of steam in the last like 20 minutes or so, and then it has one of the best emotional scenes that Disney's ever made. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag in the second, third quarter of the film.
Yeah.
Or fourth quarter of the film.
Like thinking of that other scene with Christopher Robin that we were talking about with the braver than you are. Like in that scene, like he's super British, and in this movie, like he's not that. Like he doesn't have that super British accent.
Okay, I'd have to listen to it again. It's not like Princess Leia, like British and then not British, is it? It's not that harsh.
It might be.
I mean, he's got a British accent though in this one.
But I feel like it's a little harsher. I don't know. I'd have to listen to it again.
Okay. Yeah.
But
I don't know. Courtney, what do you think? I mean, overall on this flick, did you have the same issues that we had towards the ending?
I did. I know when I watched it the first time when we were doing the thread, I was more engaged in that second part. And then I rewatched it last night and I definitely noticed that like I was having a hard time keeping my concentration and it was kind of like looking at other things and like maybe not paying as much attention. But I think the cutest thing in the whole movie happens in that second part too, though, when Pooh and Piglet see Tigger up in the tree.
Yeah.
The Jagulars part is the cutest thing ever. You look up, they drop on you. It's like the cutest thing. I love that.
Ryan,
so if you ever listen, Agatha, if you ever listen to the audiobook by Peter Dennis of Winnie the Pooh and House of Pooh Corner, when they do that scene, like his Piglet's like, I'm looking down! And like, I mean, it's like the most outrageous explanation you've ever heard in your life. Like, so that's my nod for like that. Like, go listen to those audiobooks. They're wonderful. You know, there are things that I remember about the second half that I really like. Like, I do love the narrator turning the book on its side, like reminding you, this is a book. Like, you know, we're going to turn it on its side so Tigger can get down easier. So we're not going to make him fall out of the tree. The rabbit stuff in that one section does kind of like yes, we get it, you don't want, you know, you don't like him, you don't want him to bounce, and it's like he doesn't learn his lessons because, you know, Tigger saves him, he gets to the he learns how to bounce, and then in the next one he's, you know, it's like if Tigger gets down he won't bounce anymore, and like Rabbit's like, I'm gonna hold you to it. I'm like, but you just learned the lesson of this, like why do we gotta keep repeating this lesson for you?
Yeah,
like where is that? But so I don't know that it, you know, it totally loses me. Like there are things I like about both sequences, but definitely more in the front end is what I remember more from my childhood and what I get more nostalgic about.
Yeah.
Melissa, what is your favorite song? Do you have one in this? Is it just maybe the title song? The title song? Song?
That song? It's hard because I really love Heffalumps and Woozles.
Yeah.
But I really do love when he does his up down song, up down touch the ground, like it's just so cute. I don't know. I think that's my favorite.
Does anyone else have like a favorite song from this?
I'm just a little.
Yeah, that's right. So good.
That's my favorite.
That's so good too. He's so adorable in that.
Yeah, he's amazingly cute.
Maybe the cutest.
Maybe.
One might say. Look, who are you going to put up against him? Dumbo? I guess Dumbo is really like the main.
There will be more once we think about this.
I mean, I love Stitch.
Oh, Stitch. Yeah. Oh, God.
Stitch is up there.
There's also a lot of the new baby characters like Baby Moana, Baby Dory, Baby Sven. Like, those have some really cute, you know, elements to them. Baymax is fairly adorable when he's just Baymax.
Yeah. Baymax is good.
Yeah.
I mean, Vanellope Schweetz is pretty cute.
So cute.
The homeless line. Yeah. That is the most Sarah Silverman moment of that whole thing. Where like you can just picture her in the booth doing that line. It's, you know, makes perfect sense. So we always have three questions that we ask of these films, and I think it's a good time to bring that up.
Mm-hmm.
So the first question we're going to ask is, does it have a moral, and does the film achieve it? The second question we're going to ask is, what is the iconic shot of the film? And then the third question is, does the film hold up? So right from the top, does it have a moral, Ryan?
I don't think so. I struggle with that. I think there are morals for individual characters. I think, Leo, you can learn from Eeyore. There's life lessons. Like Eeyore, you know, he can be melancholy. He can be depressed. But he still wants friends. He still wants community. He still, you know, wants that connection. You know, Piglet, even though you're very small and very timid, you can still be brave. Al, you can be wise, but you're still, you know, an idiot. those kinds of elements. Like, I think there's character elements, but I think overall it's more of an emotional. And I think it succeeds on that point, on being emotional, because we all have that tug at it.
Yeah, I think that there are separate morals within the characters themselves, but I don't think there's an overarching moral to the film.
Yeah, I can
With
that.
If anything, it would be that, you know, to accept others for who they are, because it is very such an eclectic mix of characters. You know, really, I would say, like, Kanga is probably, like, the least dynamic character, right? She's just, like, mom, you know?
For now, yeah.
Yeah, in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, but everyone else sort of has problems. You know, we don't really learn anything about problems with Kanga and Roo. You know, Roo's a kid, Kanga's a mom.
Yeah.
You know, they don't really go much deeper into that. But everyone else has, like, psychological issues, pretty much. And I think that they do a good job, you know, in doing all that. But yeah, I don't think there's an overarching, like, this is the message of our film. I think that there are many little messages in, and I think they deliver on them.
Yeah.
I think they do a really good job in delivering on them. And yeah, so I think that it does have that, and I think it does do it. And I do think it also has an emotional aim.
Mm-hmm.
You are supposed to find Pooh Bear adorable.
Yeah.
You know, you are supposed to get emotionally attached to that character, and I think they do that very, very well. Melissa, what about you?
Yeah, same. I think that the real thing with this film is the emotions. You know, you are supposed to, like you said, like, it's like Toy Story. You know, you're supposed to relate to these things as, like, you would relate to your toys. And if, like, you're a young kid watching this, like, you probably have played with your toys, like Christopher Robin, you know, going on adventures with them and bringing them around and all that kind of stuff. So I think that also is something that they handle very well. And they kind of, you know, do a good job of having you connect with not only, you know, Christopher Robin as, like, kind of, like, see yourself in him, but also, like, his toys and how, you know, they can come to life and have their own adventures.
Courtney, how about you? Does this film have a moral, and does it complete it?
I mean, I think that if you did have an overarching moral, it would be the importance of friendship, love people for who they are. I think those are the things that are the, you know, most common threads,
yeah,
between all the individual morals of the characters. But I think definitely the emotional side of it is really what I take away from it. I didn't realize until I rewatched this with you guys that I was so, like, emotionally attached to this movie and had so much nostalgia, because I haven't watched it in so long.
Yeah.
But I mean, I sat there and I sang every word to all the songs, and it didn't occur to me how much that impacted me. So I would say overall the emotional is the focus of this film, and it definitely succeeds in that way.
You know, you bring up an interesting point. I think that that's something to look at. Where Winnie the Pooh is one of the most, you know, popular characters that Disney has ever sort of put up on the stage. Obviously, he was already a pre-existing character, but, you know, one of the most famous Disney characters, popular Disney characters. But this film isn't really celebrated in the way some of their other iconic films are. I don't know why, but you just don't see this movie in particular treated the same way that, like, Cinderella is, or even, you know, Peter Pan, you know, something like that. It just sort of, I don't know. It, like, the character is huge, but not this particular movie itself.
Do you think it's because he's had such a lengthy run? Like,
that's probably what it is. There's so much to pick from.
There's the animated series. There's, like, the newer movies. There's, like, so much that you can get Pooh Bear from that, like, maybe the one film. I mean, this is where the attraction gets its, you know,
yes,
story beats, yeah. So I mean, like, this movie is celebrated in that essence, but yeah, I think it's maybe because there's so much Pooh Bear to pull from.
Oh, and maybe too because this is like a combination of four different stories rather than its own like individual standalone story. You don't have like the one, you have pieces. So
yeah, okay.
Like, you know, how we did, we picked our favorite segment. People mm-hmm. probably over time have picked and choose which their favorites are and have watched those ones. I know there's certain segments of this that I've watched more than others.
Yeah.
Have maybe been on sing-alongs or, you know, whatever the case may be. So it's probably difficult for people to kind of identify this as a complete movie because they may have pieced it out in that way.
Yeah, and especially, like, I think, Courtney, when you and I were younger, like, they would play certain segments on, like, you know, the Disney Channel, like, I don't know if they'd play like the whole movie in one shot, but yeah, they would do like I can remember the Pooh and the Honey Tree like a bunch when I was younger, and probably like you said, like the sing along tapes, like all those. So they kind of have re-separated it.
Yeah.
When you said I can remember, I heard I carumba.
Well, that too. I carumba.
I carumba. What, ladies and gentlemen, do you feel Melissa's coughing about? What do you think is the iconic shot? Why don't we go with the iconic shot herself, Melissa?
No, this is too hard. There's like six of them.
Hey, guys, guess what I don't miss about this show? This conversation.
Can I nominate a few?
It's been a while. Wait, what?
Can I nominate a few?
No, you have to pick your favorite one.
There's too many.
Yeah, you have to pick one.
No. Because there's the one
where... No. I'll cut off your mic. I swear to God. No.
Oh,
no, 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 no.
Can I
no,
do it,
no.
Can I do it at the end? Like,
no.
Why not?
Because
I need honorable mentions.
Write a blog about it.
I need honorable mentions.
Write an article about
it. Maybe people will say your honorable mentions.
All right.
There you go. There you go. You want to go last? You're going to go
and
last.
Then you'll know.
Yeah, then you'll know. Okay. You'll be influenced by others. So peer pressure will make you pick your favorite. How about that?
Okay, fine.
Okay. Courtney, why don't you go first?
My iconic shot is the shot when we're looking up into the tree and this blue sky is behind the tree and Pooh Bear is floating up during Little Black Rain Cloud under his blue balloon.
It's a good one. Ryan Wilson?
It's at the end where Pooh and Christopher Robin are on the bridge and they have their Pooh sticks and they're getting ready to drop them into the creek. That moment right there.
Damn it, man. That's mine, too. That's mine, too. It was a toss-up. It was a toss-up between that and Tigger standing over Pooh Bear in that first encounter. But I think more of the thing of Winnie the Pooh is in the them on the bridge during that narration, back to the camera. Something that we've seen in a lot of paintings.
Yeah.
You know, that's been replicated a number of times. Melissa, what is your one favorite? What is your one iconic shot?
Well, a lot of them were mentioned, so that's good.
Okay.
The one I...
Pete technically gave an honorable mention.
Yeah, he did.
I did.
The one that like kind of goes along with Courtney's is like where Pooh like loses the string in the balloon and the balloon's like, you know, deflating and the bees are chasing him. Like, that's always one that my mind goes back to.
Okay.
But I think the one that... that sticks with me just because it's so freaking cute is when Pooh is stuck in the hole and Christopher Robin's like looking at him like, what did you do now? Like, it's just like, you know, you silly old bear, like trouble again. Like, I don't know. It's just like it encapsulates that whole dynamic.
Okay.
And just Pooh like, this is life. I'm stuck in a hole. Like, but I really wanted that honey. Like, whatever.
Shout out to that whole scene though, because when Rabbit is decorating Pooh's butt,
yes,
that is probably the funniest thing. I laughed so hard through that whole scene.
Yeah, and that face that he draws with that nose is just yeah.
All right, that's good. See, you got it. You got one out there. Good. So good. So happy. Look at you. Got like
but when 80... he's doing that up down.
No. Gotta learn control, woman.
Now.
Hey, look, it's gotten better. It used to be entire scenes that she would describe.
Yeah, at least I get shots.
So, yeah, at least we're getting shots nowadays. That's good. Does this film hold up, Ryan Wilson? Does this movie hold up, Ryan Wilson?
It does hold me up. It holds me up. When I'm having a sad day, I know. it holds up. I, you know, watching it now, like I had all the same like warm feelings that I had when I was a kid. You know, it absolutely holds up. I don't think that there's any second guessing that.
I think it loses a little bit of steam in the last 15 minutes, but I don't care. I think it holds up. I think that it ends on a soaring note with that Winnie the Pooh and Christopher Robin scene. Rabbit should just be shot in the face. But outside of that...
with a little pop gun.
I think it's great. I think it definitely holds up. Melissa?
Same. Yeah, the little bit of steam that it loses with the rabbit and Tigger, like, I'm okay with it. It doesn't take me out of it for that long. And I think it goes by quick enough that the entire film overall really does, you know, still stick with me. And I think if you showed it to a kid nowadays, they'd still enjoy it.
Courtney?
Yeah, I think it holds up 100%. I mean, this is one that families go back to all the time. And somebody even said in the thread, like, this is something that people still decorate baby nurseries in. Like, yep. There's Winnie the Pooh baby nurseries. That and Dumbo, it's like kind of a toss-up between the two for baby nurseries. So it's something that people, you know, go back to, and it's accessible for families. And, you know, I definitely think it holds up. It's the cutest.
Yeah.
So there you have it, folks. Pretty unanimous in a positive way that The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh holds up quite well, has some beautiful moments, has some good morals within their characters, has some great iconic shots, and man, one of these days we should make it that we have to agree on what the shot is.
Didn't we try and do that once?
Probably.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
It didn't work end well. In flames. Is that what happened?
Objective. It's subjective.
It is.
And, you know.
But not who the cutest one is. The most adorable is Pooh Bear.
I don't know. We're going to talk about
that. We're going to do the science. We're going to do the science, and we're going to find out the real answer. And it will.
Aren't there actual, like, cutest measurements? Like, this is what makes a character cute? We should look that up.
There is, actually, yeah.
Yeah,
there
the ratio, is? Okay. Yeah. There is.
All right, we'll look into that. So, all right, guys. Well, that's this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you go off and enjoy watching Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. And give us your thoughts on it, you know, on the Facebook page and all that kind of good stuff. That'd be great. And, of course, if you're listening to this, you know, remember to share out the show. You know, it's a really big thing for us to, you know, to reach new people. And the best way to do that, the most effective way to do that is you, the listener. So if you enjoy, you know, what we do on a weekly basis, you know, go share that show, you know, big help. And, of course, another way you can help out the show is to go over to iTunes and give a 5-star review. And if I am correct in my thinking, there is one to be read today?
There is not. But there isn't. We need someone to write their first 2018 review. So hopefully you guys can go do that, and I'll read it next time, and you can have your name as one of the first for 2018.
That would be awesome. And of course, when you leave a 5-star review, Melissa reads it at the end of the show for all to hear. So thank you so much for tuning in this week. And next week, Ryan, I'm sorry, just give everyone an idea again of what we're going to be diving into.
So it's going to be all Epcot. We're going to do the Festival of the Arts and then go back and look at its history when it came to the Millennium Celebration.
Epcot. Yes.
Epcot.
Epcot. All right, guys. Well, hey. Till next week, this episode of Disney Magic Hour has been brought to you by MEI Travel. For all your vacation planning needs, for visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, traveling anywhere around the globe, head over to meitravel.com. Becky and her team can always get you started on your own adventure. Right now, you're listening to There You Are. You can find this track and more over at soundcloud.com/PogoMix. His website, pogomix.net. We are LastGenPodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. Melissa runs that little thing over there. You can find us on Facebook if you search for Disney Magic Hour. And, of course, you are listening to this show, but you can also find this show on iTunes, Google Play Music. There it was. And Stitcher. And Melissa, where can everyone find pictures and help support the show in different ways and get to do interact with us every week on a live thread?
Yep. The pictures are at Instagram. You can find us at Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And if you head over to patreon.com/DisneyMagicHour, you can find out how to sign up, support the show, and get on our live threads and interact with us in our Facebook group.
Till next week, folks, have a good weekend, even if your weekend is sort of wrapping up because today is Sunday. Enjoy what's left of your weekend, and hopefully you're listening to this at work and it made the day go a little quicker. Till then, say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Courtney.
Goodnight, Courtney.
Say goodnight, Ryan.
Goodnight, Ryan.
Goodnight, Pete. And say goodnight, Pogo.